This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
What many court observers and many others forget is we talk about the principles that are in front of the court, but we forget there's real people that bring these cases. And Justice Thomas never loses of the real people in front of the court.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Judge Amul Fapar. His new book, The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. We'll hear some of those stories a little bit later on in today's program with Judge Fapar. First, we're joined by Dr. Gary Wolfram. He is William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics, and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College. Dr. Wolfram, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Talking about a piece you wrote recently over at the Washington Examiner, cuts to discretionary spending won't solve America's debt crisis. And your piece was written before the agreement between Democrats and Republicans about the debt limit suspension. What's the real debt number we're talking about here? You reference in the piece there's intergovernmental holdings of Treasury debt. Should we be as concerned about that as other kinds of debt? What are the real numbers we're talking about here?
Well, there's overall debt, and that is includes both the debt that's out there, that bonds that we have to pay back, but the total debt includes intergovernmental holdings. That is, the Social Security Trust Fund has what they call, they have basically bonds that is just one government agency, the Treasury, owing another government agency. Mm-hmm. So the actual debt that's got to be paid off, like when the bonds come due, is in the debt held by the public. And that is, again, that's at one of the record high numbers. It's nearly 100% of GDP, mm-hmm. gross domestic product, and so that's a large number. You know, one of the concerns has been, should we keep raising the debt limit? And of course, we do always keep raising the debt limit.
I know there's a very simple answer to this, which is we keep spending, but maybe on a larger perspective, how do we allow this to get so large?
Well, primarily what happened was that we used to have about 2/3 of the spending was based on annual appropriations, and now you have 12 different appropriations bills, and you have so much for defense and so much for energy, et cetera. But we also started to put in, starting particularly in 1963, we started putting in things like Social Security. And that money gets spent whether it's appropriated or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of the key here, is that the big numbers are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And those things get spent whether we have an appropriations bill or not. And in fact, I just looked at some more recent numbers here. If what you did was you eliminated all of this discretionary spending, that is, we didn't pass any of these appropriations bills except defense, in fiscal 2022 that we just completed, we still would have run a deficit of about $500 billion. So unless you deal with the Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and, you know, they are the primary, amounts that the spending's on. Unless you deal with those things, then you're not going to deal with deficits.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, nobody wants to do that. Look at what's happening in France, where they decided that, you know, they weren't going to raise the amount, that people would get under their form of Social Security. There's riots in the streets, and no one, in the discussion here was saying, oh, we've got to deal with Social Security. They're all saying, no, we're going to protect Social Security. And the reality is that money gets spent whether we have an appropriation bill or not. So until you say, well, wait a minute, maybe we can't be doing this. Maybe we've got to, if you're 50 years old or younger, maybe you're not going to get as much Social Security as is in the statute. Now, it's harder for the people that are older because you may have already made your decision about how long you're going to work and how much you're going to save and that sort of thing based on the amount of Social Security money that you're going to get. But I think we now need to alert people that, hey, this just can't go on forever. And so if you're going to really deal with the deficits and the debt, you're going to have to deal with the Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid.
And that's the point of your piece. People can see it at WashingtonExaminer.com. Cuts to discretionary spending won't solve America's debt crisis. So Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, without necessarily endorsing a plan of action, what are potential ways, if we were serious about this, that we could address those programs?
Well, I think what you'd have to do with Social Security is that, as I was just mentioning, you have to just say, okay, if you're at a certain age or younger, we're going to reduce the amount of Social Security benefits that you're going to get. People probably don't know that Congress could eliminate Social Security tomorrow. And there's nothing in that says that they have to, you know, you've put your, you know, you could say, well, gee, I'm 53 years old and I've been paying Social Security, but that's been going to pay the people that are on Social Security now. That's not like going into some real trust fund.
Right. It's not a lockbox.
Yes.
As Al Gore has said.
Yes. So, you know, the people probably aren't aware of that, but the bottom line here is that we're going to have to deal with this, with, that.
It was not that long ago, less than 30 years ago, in which we had surpluses, budget surpluses at the federal level for a couple of years. Can you imagine a scenario in which that is possible again?
It would be difficult. I mean, yes, and it turns out it was under Bill Clinton that we had the most recent surpluses. We had 4 years of surpluses there. I think it would, you know, given the politics of today, I think it's going to be difficult. And as I, you know, since, you know, a lot more, the thing, in a sense, maybe we're living too long, you know, you know, if you look since the 90s, people have been living longer, and people, are retiring, perhaps retiring earlier, and that is creating a drain on the Social Security Trust Fund, which is now, it's now spending more than it's taking in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's an issue that we need to deal with as well.
You also have to get the mindset of, we hear a lot of discussion about balancing a budget, which is great. That would stop adding to the debt. But if you're going to reverse that $30 trillion debt number, you actually have to build in these surpluses. And that's where your mind starts to reel at the gymnastics needed to get to that point.
Yes. You know, in 1977, Jim Buchanan and Dick Wagner wrote a book, Democracy and Deficit, A Legacy of Lord Keynes. And they were arguing that what we ought to do is have a constitutional amendment that would require a balanced budget except for emergencies. Their argument was that people think that government goods and services are actually cheaper than they really are, because we don't say, well, gee, if you want this program, we're going to have to raise your taxes. We say we're going to raise your program, but we don't set or, you know, spend on the program, but we don't raise the taxes. And so people have this, an idea that government goods and services are less expensive than they really are. And so you get a growth of government, and government gets larger than it otherwise would be.
You can read the piece at WashingtonExaminer.com. Cuts to discretionary spending won't solve America's debt crisis. Dr. Gary Wolfram, William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College. Dr. Wolfram, thanks for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Up next, Judge Amul Thapar, his new book, The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Christmas lights do more than glitter and glow. They represent a gift of love given a long time ago. This holiday season, join Historic Haws Farms on a magical journey through Lights on the Farm, presented by the award-winning light designers at Redding Lights. Climb aboard Haws Express Railways or travel by country-covered wagons through a spectacular interactive holiday light show where childhood memories and family traditions come alive. Enjoy a simple country Christmas with cocoa, candy apples, carolers, and a visit with Santa. And as a very special gift from Greg and Nicola Haws, every Thursday night, children 12 and under are free, with special discount pricing for seniors and veterans every Sunday. It's the Haws family way of saying thank you and Merry Christmas. Limited tickets are available, so hurry. Reserve your tickets today at historichaws.com and make a memory. Start a new tradition with your family at Historic Haws Farms Lights on the Farm, where they've been celebrating the holidays for over 150 years.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Tiger and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no side effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult to treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by, get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and hear us online at kcnr1460.com. We would like to take this moment to thank you for listening to KCNR, whether you're traveling this holiday season or just relaxing around a nice warm fire with family and friends. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from your friends here at KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
.edu. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find older episodes of this show and other programs on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Amul Fafar. He's a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit and the author of the new book, The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Always wonderful to read more about the great Justice Clarence Thomas, the people's justice. And this is a theme that runs throughout these 12 cases you focus on in the people's justice. It's not a phrase that maybe our friends on the left or some court observers would say. They'd say the corporation's justice or the justice for the Second Amendment. Why title this book The People's Justice?
Yeah, because I think the one thing you'll see about Justice Thomas's jurisprudence is it does two things that are really important that are often lost. So Justice Thomas is an originalist. And what originalism is it's trying, I think probably most of your listeners have heard of it in some way,
mm-hmm.
It's trying to interpret the document as the people meant it to be interpreted. In other words, the American people ratified the Constitution. They've ratified the amendments. When they pass laws, their representatives pass the laws. It's a judge's job to interpret the law, not make up the law. And when you do that, you reflect the will of the people. But I think it goes much beyond that with Justice Thomas, as I think you'll see in this book. What most court observers, or many court observers, I should say, and many others forget, is we talk about the principles that are in front of the court, but we forget there's real people that bring these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And Justice Thomas never loses sight of the real people in front of the court. So as you said, his critics may say, and critics of many originalists may say, you're pro-corporation. This book proves them wrong. They may say, you're pro-the rich. This book proves them wrong. And they may say, you're pro the big guy. Again, this book proves them wrong.
I think it's a paraphrase of Justice Thomas saying, when we actually follow the original meaning of the Constitution, the weak and politically powerless stand to benefit the most. Why is it so hard for his critics to see that?
You know, I think the critics of originalism and Justice Thomas turn a blind eye to what is really going on. I mean, how many times, so for example, in the first chapter is about eminent domain.
Mm-hmm.
And eminent domain is when the government takes your property. And Justice Thomas wants to go back to the original meaning of public use, meaning like sidewalks and roads, instead of, as the first chapter documents, allowing the Pfizer Corporation, who I'm sure your listeners have heard of, partner with the state and city government to take people's property so Pfizer can build a new facility and have state-of-the-art malls and restaurants and those types of things alongside. And so what Justice Thomas does there, and you're not going to see this anywhere else, you're not going to see his words repeated in the press, yet he points out in dissent how often this tool is used to benefit the rich at the expense of the poor. In fact, I document a Q&A with the city's lawyer between Justice Scalia and the city's lawyer. And Justice Scalia says, so if you're saying public use really means public purpose, do you agree that the city could take from the poor and give to the rich because they get more tax dollars? And to everyone's shock, the city's lawyer says, yes. And Justice Thomas points out how in one of those cases in D.C., 97% of the people impacted by the government's practice of eminent domain were black.
Mm-hmm. Amul Fafar is with us. The book is The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. These are wonderfully told stories in the book.
Kelo is the first chapter, and Kelo is a decision in which Justice Thomas was in the minority. He quote unquote lost that case. And as I read through the book, there were at least as many cases in which Justice Thomas was in the minority, or a couple in which he was just making comments at a case that was denied a hearing from the U.S. Supreme Court. How is Justice Thomas still influential and changing law in some of his dissents and perhaps other comments about cases?
Yeah, I think he captures a couple things. One is his rigorous research into the original meaning. If you go and look, he documents it. When he's talking about New York Times v. Sullivan, which can be found in the book at Chapter 6, his opinion in that case goes through the history exhaustively. When he's talking about parental rights in the chapter about violent video games, again, he goes through it exhaustively. And eventually that starts to convince people and convince other justices. And the other thing he does that I think, again, is so lost is he captures how these things that might have been well-intentioned, like New York Times v. Sullivan at the time, he believes are now hurting the little guy and protecting the big guy. And ironically, Chapter 6 is about an accuser of Bill Cosby.
Right.
And how it hurt her and protected Bill Cosby.
I guess we'll jump around here to a few of these 12 cases. They're all so interesting. Let me start with that one, McKee v. Cosby, a case that was not heard by the Supreme Court, but Clarence Thomas still had things to say about public figures and defamation and New York Times v. Sullivan. What's his point in his comments about the McKee v. Cosby case that was not heard by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, his point is the ultimate punchline is if you, as a result of New York Times v. Sullivan and the cases that followed it, if you accuse a public figure of something, you yourself become what's called a limited use public figure. Now get rid of the legalese and let's just talk about it for a minute. If you accuse a popular person of doing something wrong and they come back and make defamatory statements about you, the standard is so high for you to sue them that Justice Thomas says, and I'm quoting, it's almost impossible. He's quoting Byron White, a previous justice who was also a critic of New York Times v. Sullivan and where it had gone. And what happens in that case is Kathy McKee is allegedly raped by Bill Cosby. She doesn't have a venue to air her grievance anymore. And when women are coming out and saying Bill Cosby raped them, he and his legal team are attacking them. And he does the same to Kathy McKee, and she just wanted her day in court. That's all she wanted. I talked to Miss McKee. She's an incredible woman. She just wanted her day in court. And the court said, no, you're a limited use public figure. When you accused a public figure, you made yourself a public figure. And Justice Thomas, not only in that decision, but 2 years later, says, imagine 2 years later in a different decision, he doesn't forget about Kathy McKee because he is the people's justice. he points out that how ironic it is that by accusing a powerful man of rape, they can lie about you without recourse, essentially.
We'll pause there. Much more to talk about with Judge Amul Thapar. His brand new book is out now. It is The People's Justice. We'll have more about Clarence Thomas and these cases in just a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi. This is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already, we are experiencing record-high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high-priced winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has teamed up with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the military for their service. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage features one-of-a-kind decorations, ornaments, wreaths, and garland, vintage glassware and table settings, paintings, jewelry, sports memorabilia, and collectibles along with toys and treasures in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, noon to 5, and Monday, 10 to 6.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing up this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Casa 1910. If you've been curious, perhaps even tempted, to try a Mexican puro, this is the stick to get. An absolute pleasure to smoke, and honestly, one of my all-time top tens, the Casa 1910. Get yours today, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965. EDU.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Judge Amul Thapar. His brand new book, The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. It's an incredible story. I knew the surface level of this story about the former NFL star Warwick Dunn, but you go into great detail about his mother being murdered, the alleged killer being found mentally incompetent after years behind bars, years after the fact. Clarence Thomas writes in this case, which again is a case in which he was in the minority, and stresses the effect of crime on victims' family in his dissent, the human cost of the decision. Many times, again, critics would say that Justice Thomas doesn't look at the human cost of his decisions. What is so important to him about this particular case and how it affects the victims of the crime?
I think what he thought, so the first thing that I think, and I haven't talked to him about it, but I think upset him, is, and I'm quoting him, that the majority barely spent the two words to mention the victim's name when they were saying, woe is this killer. And what he wanted to do is point out there was a completely other side to the story. And the amazing story of an amazing American, Warwick Dunn, 5'8", heart of gold, one of 20 NFL running backs to have over 10,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But when his mother was brutally murdered, he was 18. He had decided in his own mind to give up his dream of playing college football and raise his siblings. It wasn't until his grandmother insisted he go that he went away. And Justice Thomas took the time to show and document that there was victims who were affected by this. And Justice Thomas captures this. It's again why he's the people's justice. He has his finger on the heartbeat of the people. And you see this not only in his decisions, but the way he interacts with the public. I've been with him at public events. When the event's done, Justice Thomas stays and takes a picture with every person. And when everyone's left, he goes around and thanks the support staff. That's the kind of justice that cares about the people, writes about the people, and understands the people's constitution.
The McDonald v. Chicago case involving gun rights, a post-Heller decision. We often hear about a post-Heller environment when it comes to the Second Amendment, but McDonald v. Chicago is also very important as to whether states and localities could ban handgun possession. We meet the plaintiff here. It's a wonderful story. Well, it's not a wonderful story about what he went through, but the story is brought to life through your telling in this book. What did Clarence Thomas decide or help decide in McDonald v. Chicago? Why is it so important to our Second Amendment rights?
Well, Otis McDonald, as you point out, was an amazing human being who moved up from Louisiana to Chicago for a better life, participated in our military, put himself through school, became the head of a union, and moved his family out of the heart of inner city Chicago to a suburb, Morgan Park, of inner city Chicago. And he couldn't protect himself. He tried everything in his family and his kids. So he wanted to have a gun so that if someone broke into his house, and the chapter documents it and walks you through it, as you mentioned, and I think the reader will be completely blown away by his story and how all he wanted was a gun so that if someone got into his house, it would be too late to call the police.
Or if someone
had tried an alarm system.
If someone were hiding under his car, as actually happened.
Yeah. And so Otis had the courage, the immense courage, to sue to protect his gun rights so he could have the right to own a firearm and protect himself and his family. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas joined the majority in upholding Otis's gun rights. But he also wrote about the history of blacks being denied guns in the South after the Civil War and pointed out that one of the purposes of the 14th Amendment was to make sure blacks were able to protect themselves with firearms. And so you had the grandson of slaves remedying what he viewed as an injustice, Otis McDonald, and another one writing about our nation's terrible history, especially in the South, of denying people guns based on the color of their skin.
Why is it important for you? Why was it important for you to write a book like this? Perhaps Justice Thomas's critics won't read, even if they do, unlikely to be swayed. Why is it important for you to take your interpretation of the people's justice and put pen to paper?
Yeah, so what I tried to do that's different than the critics of originalism, different than the critics of Justice Thomas, is I tell you my views in the intro and the conclusion. Everything in between is the stories of the cases in Justice Thomas's own words. And you can form the conclusion. I think your listeners, and hopefully the readers of the book, will be smart enough to read it. It will arm them to talk about originalism. And it's written in a way that's accessible to everyone. And it was important to me, Justice Scalia said, we have an obligation to fly the flag of originalism because the academies aren't going to do it. And people aren't going to learn about originalism. I was talking to my neighbor 5-6 years ago, and he said, "You're one of those crazy originalists I heard." And I said, "What? Can I explain to you what originalism is?" And he said, "Sure. I love my neighbor. He loves me. You know, we might think differently." When I explained it to him, he said, "Don't all judges do that? Aren't they all just trying to interpret the words?" And it dawned on me then that if I could write a book that was gripping and would draw the reader in by telling the stories and interview the litigants, interview the lawyers, and let their words and the words of Justice Thomas speak for itself, people would, A, be armed with knowledge, which is always powerful, and B, just maybe, there's a great vast of this country that I think is open-minded. Open-minded enough to let my family come here, let me, the son of immigrants, be appointed 3 times by presidents and succeed in this country. Open-minded enough to open up this book, read it, if it's written in terms everyone can understand. And people who think they're critics of originalism might just embrace it.
As an aside, I think it's also vitally important for some of these cases, Kelo, the school voucher case in Cleveland, Chicago v. Morales, McDonald, that the stories are told. So often we shorthand these cases and say, "Oh, Kelo, it's eminent domain," and we forget a little about the people behind the cases and the stories behind the cases. This book remedies that as well. I want to ask you one final question as we let you go, though. You know these decisions, you've studied these opinions, and you know a lot about Justice Thomas. Was there anything in your research in putting this book together that surprised even you about Justice Clarence Thomas?
Yes, the thing that surprised me most, actually, if I can say 2 things. One was just how he always captures the real people, whether it's in the Work Done chapter or the struggle parents are facing in the Violent Video Games chapter, or what Kathy McKee faced as she tried to take on Bill Cosby. He always understood that. That surprised me how often he wove that in. Like you, I knew the principles. I studied his originalism, but I hadn't really paid attention to that. It really came to life in writing this book. And the second thing was the strong black voice he has. While he's an originalist first, and he cares passionately about the real people in front of the court, I was surprised by how strong his black voice is and how he really would, he almost in the vein, obviously he admires, he quotes often Frederick Douglass, but there's a little bit of even Malcolm X in him, and I mean that in a positive way, and Martin Luther King in him, and I think that's lost, and I hope people in reading this book will see that.
Judge Amul Fapar, his new book, The People's Justice, Clarence Thomas and the Constitutional Stories That Define Him. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, we talk with Timothy McDonald from Hillsdale's Music Department. He'll tell us about music and the origins of a liberal education. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
This holiday season, join the all-new tradition of lights and festivities for the entire family at Reading Garden of Lights.
Taking place November 17th through January 7th at Turtle Bay's McCalla Botanical Gardens.
At the Sundial Bridge in Reading, California.
Explore over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens featuring over 1 million lights. Plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more.
Reading Garden of Lights, presented by Mercy Medical Center, Reading.
Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive is proud to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the armed forces. North Valley Distributing, serving both the electrical and electronics industries, a one-stop shopping experience. North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive. Call 530-222-1500. 530-222-1500. Proud to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
Happy holidays from our Home Helpers family to yours. At Home Helpers, we are proud to help your loved ones celebrate this holiday season from the safety and comfort of their own homes. We are equally proud of the men and women who can't be with us. To the bravest among us, far from home serving our country this holiday season, to all members of the military in all branches, past and present, and those who made the ultimate sacrifice. With respect, gratitude, and love, we thank you. Happy holidays from all of us at Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love brings you home.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu, click on subscribe, and enter your email address. You'll get an email every time there's a new edition of this program. We're joined by Dr. Timothy McDonald. He is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music at Hillsdale College. Dr. McDonald, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back again, talking today about music and the origins of liberal education. What would you say is the classical view of music?
Well, classical in the sense of, classical thought, classical Western thought. I think music is, we know that the position of, perhaps the two most important founders of that tradition of classical thinking, Plato and Aristotle, they believed that music was at the heart of it and perhaps the most important formative discipline for the young in their education and for the well-being of society, that music had an ordering or possibly a disordering effect on the young. And so it was very important. Yeah.
Were Plato and Aristotle essentially in agreement on the topic?
It's interesting because Plato and Aristotle are frequently seen as, there's a sense that there's some, divergence in Aristotle, but there's a great deal that Aristotle owes to Plato. And, there's a lot in common, I would say, between these two thinkers on the point of music, particularly the power that music has to form the young. And, so they both thought that, interestingly, that the most important subjects for educating the young were music and gymnastics. Hmm. Two things which we think of as actually extracurricular largely. They're not actually central. That there's a lot perhaps to be said about that, but that this was a kind of the juxtaposition of those two things are not, accidental. In a certain sense, they balance the formation of the soul. It's, this idea of, the physical and then the transcendent and the brutal and the possibility of brutality and the mm-hmm. possibility of refinement. Those kinds of things, I think, are really, at the heart of why they juxtaposed and integrated these two seemingly very disparate things.
How did there come to be an understanding, about the association between music and arithmetic? Was that clear from the beginning, or did it only reveal itself over time?
It's hard to know how people initially thought of music in this way. I think the idea of things like the octave, the natural difference between a man's voice and a woman's voice being more or less an octave, mm-hmm. I think that probably was easily noticed, but it really isn't until we get to Pythagoras, who more or less predates Aristotle and Plato by a century, that we begin to discuss, he discovers and articulates the role of proportion in sound and from that, we derive this idea that music and the things like the overtone series, which he demonstrated on the monochord, how this becomes a driving force in our understanding of the created order. In fact, you have wonderful Renaissance manuscripts where you see the hand of God kind of coming out of a cloud over a monochord as the instrument of creation, that music was in fact more or less the blueprint for the fabric of creation. And to some extent, that is not true. You know, there was this idea that music was of the spheres, you know, ordered the heavenly bodies. That, of course, is not necessarily the common understanding at this point. However, things like geology still depend on what they call harmonic analysis to understand the way that sediment, you know, layers itself naturally. So they found in this number and nature were related, and that there was eventually an appreciation of the order of beauty in number. And even in the world of the trivium, things like rhetoric and so forth, you know, it's not, I think, well enough appreciated that beauty in things like poetry, for instance, depend on number because of meter. You take somebody like Augustine, who wrote a treatise called De Musica. I said, oh, this must be about music. Well, when you read it, it's actually more about poetry and meter. Very interesting.
Talking with Dr. Timothy McDonald, Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College. How did the ideas surrounding music change as liberal education begins to develop in the West?
I think I would say that it suffers from the same problem that many of the disciplines do, which is ultimately being isolated into a speciality that is, you know, sort of siloed into its own world. And it's really the opposite of its origins. You know, the study of music in the West, especially, you know, after the Dark Ages, after when we start to see the beginning of Christendom and Christian culture in the West develop, the heart of learning was centered on liturgical prayer. And so schools were developed specifically to serve liturgical prayer. And this was where the cathedral schools emerged. So training in music and, of course, all of the liberal arts was essential for us to articulate our culture in a way, our religious culture, our liturgical culture. And the way that we, you know, kind of communed with the divine. That's what the whole purpose of it was. And of course, from these cathedral schools emerged the universities. And, you know, the story of the development of the universities is a story of kind of a progress from integration to deracination, from the idea that there's a unity of knowledge among these different disciplines, that sort of eventually is left. I think the only place you see the continuation of this connection between worship, music, and study would be in England, where you have cathedral choir schools still. And even in the universities, places like Magdalen College has a boy choir because they have a college to train the young boys as well. So it's an interesting that England is the place where you still find the remnants of this.
What do you see, or what is the role of music in a liberal education today? Like we offer at Hillsdale, where does music play its role?
I think that music should be treated, you know, a bit more in a nuts and bolts kind of way, like it had been by Pythagoras. I mean, Pythagoras's discoveries actually tell us a lot about the world that we live in, things that are actually eternal. You know, the overtone series is the same here as it is on Pluto or something like that. And so it's very, very important for us to understand that. I think we can understand the consequences of number and beauty if we really delve into that. And I taught the sort of the general core course on music recently, and I kind of did a bit of an experiment. We talked a great deal about number and music and proportion and overtone series and the discoveries of Pythagoras. And we then started to write music with students who had no experience doing that. And I taught them, you know, the basics of counterpoint and what happens when we put tones together. And finding beauty in that, heightening the awareness, heightening the ear to these possibilities, I think that's really important, for us to recover, some of our cultural tradition, that's so rich and it makes it, the contemplation of beauty is sort of the first step to the contemplation of the ultimate things. So yeah.
That's a core course.
It is a core course, so, Music 204.
So everybody needs to take it to graduate from Hillsdale here.
It is one of the arts requirement options, I should say. So there are other core courses in the arts, like theater, for instance, that could also fulfill it. But it is one of the most common choices here.
For the students that choose this course, what are those things you want to make sure that they know and remember after leaving the classroom?
I think that the idea that music is not an accident, that we didn't just sort of make it up out of nothing. It actually, God made the universe out of nothing, but in doing so, he kind of invested it with this natural order that is discernible. Like, we can see it, we can hear it, we can recognize this order. And in doing so, when we hear beauty in music, we know that there is some kind of, there's a reason why we hear certain tones as beautiful, other tones as discordant. And the interplay of those things are kind of they're kind of a metaphor for our existence. And so those are the kinds of things I want them to walk out with. Like, these are little tones from the eternal that kind of remind us who we are and where we come from.
Dr. Timothy McDonald, he is associate professor of music and director of sacred music at Hillsdale College. Dr. McDonald, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Gary Wolfram from Hillsdale's Economics Department, Judge Amul Fapar, his new book, The People's Justice, on Clarence Thomas, and Timothy McDonald from Hillsdale's Music Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you find your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Whether you're born in country or the country lifestyle was born in you, celebrate Christmas country style at the Christmas celebration of the decade at historic Hawes Farms, a country Christmas playground where folks gather to play as hard as they work. All ages invited and all are welcome. Catch a ride on a country covered wagon or the mighty Hawes Express and view lights on the farm. Warm yourself by glowing fires, roast s'mores, sip cocoa, and enjoy the friendship and freedom that these country folks have enjoyed for over 150 years. Let the kids loose to enjoy all the rides from go-karts to roller coasters. Ice skate for as long as you like, free, thanks to Hawes Ranch and Farm Supply. Reserve your ticket to ride today at historichawsfarms.com or simply head out to Hawes Farms and yell, Merry Christmas. They'll know what you need. And have a very Merry Christmas from Greg and Nicola Hawes.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Now, this This is Carl Bott.
And Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.